Jema. So we have come to the end of the Gita, the 18th chapter. But it's a long chapter and it'll take a few, as we know that in Essays on the Gita, this is the 43rd chapter. So now the final secret of action is being disclosed to us. Last time we read about faith. Faith is the central driver. Faith literally implies that what is the GPS that I have set on my car? That's it. So faith will take us ultimately to that. As is a man's faith, so will he ultimately arrive at. So I may do outwardly so-called work, which is the divine work, but I may be doing it purely for egoistic purposes. Then I won't find the divine. I will discover the whatever I am trying to achieve through that. So faith is the central driving force in action. And of course, by faith is not just a mental belief which comes and goes, but something very deep which endures, which persists. Like we know the story of Madame Curie and her husband, that how they persisted in discovering the X-ray. Even he died, but his wife continued the search. So faith is that core within a human being, and it's most important element. But then, are there other elements? Yes, there are other elements, and they have their own important role. So this is important, because otherwise people believe, I have faith, I have blind faith, therefore I am going to achieve. Yes, but the time taken, the distance covered, the problems that may come on the way, it's like you have started your journey and set your GPS that I want to go to Pondicherry from Chennai. Okay, so, but now, in that journey, you have started very well, but many things may happen on the way. There may be accident, there may be roadblocks. The driver may suddenly, because he has the GPS, but all the same, while driving, he may put a wrong effort. Car may have an accident. All kinds of things are there. Of course, ultimately you will arrive. You have to persist through that whole process. So faith is like the GPS which tells us where we are going. If you want to know what is my destiny, where I am going to reach, we have to consult nobody, no astrologer, no one. We have to consult in our heart what is my faith. If my faith is that I'll arrive at the divine, I will arrive at the divine. Whatever may happen on the way. If my faith is, well, I have to just, you know, develop probably some power, say these. So probably I'll reach that point and stop there. So faith is the center, but there are important elements around faith, and that's what Sri Aurobindo discusses in this chapter. The gunas, mind and works. So now, faith was the first one, the gunas, mind and works. This is chapter 19 of book 2, part 2. But otherwise, if you just take from 1 to 48 chapter, then this is the 43rd chapter. So in this chapter, Sri Aurobindo tells us what other than faith, what are the elements which are important ingredients in this journey. And so he starts with, but there are on very page number 493, 7-8 lines below, or rather fourth line from above, faith, Shraddha, the will to believe and to be, know, live and enact the truth that we have seen is the principal factor. So if I have faith in the transformation, I will arrive at transformation, whatever time it takes, whatever difficulties, challenges. If I have faith that the Mother Sri Aurobindo will carry me, they are divine, they will carry me through that whole process regardless of anything. Someone asked Sri Aurobindo that I have faith that you are the divine and you can carry me to the goal. And he said, carry on your faith, it will be justified in time to come. It will never fail you. That's how it works. Even a blind faith is better than no faith. So this is why he has dedicated a whole chapter. And the Gita has said in so many words, Shraddha van labhate jnanam. He who has faith will arrive. So this is the importance of faith. But there are other factors, and that's what Sri Krishna tells us. But there are also the mental powers, the instruments and the conditions which help to constitute the momentum, direction and character of the activity, and are therefore of importance for a full understanding of this psychological discipline. So I remember there was one lady who was sharing her her journey with me long time back. She said she was here 2 years after completing the school, and then one day she decided, let me go out into the world, get married and see the world. And so she went to the mother to seek her blessings. So mother asked her to wait for some time. So after everybody had gone, then she called her. So first she asked that mother, she gave her blessing packet and asked her to carry on. She said, mother, why did you ask me to wait? If this is what had to be done, why ask to wait? She said that there was a destiny written for you. Now that core destiny remains, but the journey has changed. So this half an hour that she was waiting, she was changing that whole landscape so that things can be easy, facilitated. And then this lady was sharing with me, she held my hand, put her little finger on the palms and said, you will go round and round and round and round the world and then you will come back here. And she said, literally I have done that. Gone round and round. I know of other people also, I'm sure some of us will remember some persons. How so there are two things in destiny. One is the destiny which we will arrive. That's what faith will tell us. But the path that we take can be short, can be long, can be very complicated, can be through all kinds of challenges. So faith is not an automatic guarantee that will be immediate. It will be. That's what faith is. So that's what Sri Aurobindo is describing to us. The Gita describes to us. And then it speaks about the principle of sannyas and tyaga. And very clearly, Gita's emphasis is on tyag rather than sannyas. And we have so many stories. There are sannyasis who may be sitting in, no offense meant, in their akar robe, but thinking of the there are ways human mind can get engaged with riches. Oh, look at these people. They are having so much riches. They are stinking rich. They are useless. Why are you thinking about it? This is not your business. But there are people like that. So there is a story of Sri Ramakrishna which he narrates that how someone went to a sannyasi, and opposite to the sannyasi was a woman's house. She was a kind of into prostitution, and therefore different people were coming and going to her place, and this man would say, chi, 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 this, she is so horrible, she is so bad. So after they leave their bodies, this is a story confirmed by Sri Aurobindo. I mean, it's a story, but both of them have narrated this. Sri Ramakrishna narrates. So when they both died and went to wherever the gates are, so to the sannyasi, the thing was, you have to be in hell because all the time you were meditating upon hell. Your mind was with that man who is enjoying. And you had this perverse need, but you were covering it up, saying, oh, this is so bad, this is so horrible. And this lady goes to heaven. Why? Because every time she had a client, she would say, oh Lord, why have to do this? What is my destiny? Lord, may you manifest through this client. And so, every day, though people were changing, for her it was none else but Krishna. So, she goes to the higher status. So, the inner state is so much more important. So, tyag and sannyas, the difference is that sannyas is an external renunciation, which, if at all, one can ever do it, because the Gita says, can you really leave all works? You cannot. You will be bound. There are activities of the body, even if you withdraw in samadhi, he goes on to describe here, will not read that, but he says that if even a man who is withdrawn in samadhi, who has stopped his breath, the moment, and this is Sri Aurobindo's experience, he describes in Savitri all his experiences, though it's nowhere documented that Sri Aurobindo could stop his breath and stay in samadhi. But it's there in Savitri. If you read book 1, canto 5, it starts like that, that yet he could enter that magic place where breath had stopped. And we know that there are yogis, rare yogis who can achieve it. So there is no action, there is no breathing, no action. But the moment you return back, everything is there. You need food. When you need food, you have to make some chesta. You have to have somebody to cook for you. So you are getting bound by. So sannyas is, even if you go to an extreme, still you will make some effort of some kind. Even I saw the other day in Kumbh Mela, there is a man lying on bushes, on thorns. So everybody is going there, why you have to lie here and become a showpiece? But you know, a lot of people, oh, there is somebody lying on thorns. And there is some fire around him which he has to keep away. Whatever that fire was, I don't know. That smoke is there which he has to keep away. So there will be some chesta. You are looking, your mind is responding. You may be cut off from the world, yet your mind is responding. So mind has a role to play. Whereas in tyaga, it is the mind which is disciplined and not the external renunciation. I may not eat kachori and jalebi, but my mind may be full of all these things. Oh, I wish, oh, dining room, they give rasgulla one day. But I may eat these things and be free in my mind. That's the inner state. So the emphasis on gunas, mind and works is about the difference between renunciation, sannyas, which is external living, and tyaga, which is about inner renunciation. That's the main difference. So you externally leave something or you inwardly renounce. So there comes that what is meant by inner renunciation, because it's a tricky thing. What is meant by inner renunciation? So all that he will describe in great detail. So page 494, he describes the first, the basic difference. Sannyas, in the standing terminology of the sages, means the physical depositing or laying aside of desirable actions. 494, even those actions which are desirable, which are good, you renounce that. Because there is a misconception that action is the source of bondage. Tyaga, this is the Gita's distinction, is the name given by the wise to a mental and spiritual renunciation, an entire abandonment of all attached clinging to the fruit of our works, to the action itself, or to its personal initiation or rajasic impulse. So this is the inner state where you are neither initiating the action, but action will happen, it will develop in you, and all that Sri Aurobindo will describe to us how the action happens. But there is no personal stress, no egoistic choice. So though, say a person is away, living in the ashram, but every day praying for his family and children. Of course he is attached to the family. I mean, nothing wrong with it, but another person who is, well, you know, living with the family, but his mind is absorbed with the divine. There are so many instances of that kind. Mother herself is an example of marrying and having a child and yet see where she has risen. So that's where the difference lies. So in that sense, tyaga, not sannyas, is the better way. It is not the desirable actions that must be laid aside, but the desire which gives them that character has to be put away from us. I may do all actions, join a monastery, go to an ashram, and I may still have the desire for personal moksha because this world is so horrible, so bad. I'll probably reach that point, but I won't be in that state where you are utterly filled with God, which is where the Gita wants to take us. So what is the state that we must inculcate? So this is the state, last three lines on page 494. So here a person does the work but leaves the fruit entirely to the divine, and later on even the initiation of the action is by the divine. So last three lines, or the fruit may not at all come and still the work has to be performed as the thing to be done. Not because I am going to get success, I am going to get this end point, may not come. But I have the joy of doing work which is ordained to me. And that is called kartavyam karma. Kartavyam karma is not duties ordained by society, by family, etc. Kartavyam karma is the thing to be done. It's something which is deep within us, like the deep urge. And that we have to respect and do it, regardless of the result. The thing which the master within demands of us. This is kartavyam karma. Kartavyam karma is not the social duties and responsibilities and what people have told me. No, it is the thing that the divine demands within us. The success, the failure are in his hands, and he will regulate them according to his omniscient will and inscrutable purpose. So he may give failure, it's fine. As he says, failure is cradled on thy deathless arms. Success is thy passage mirrored through fortune's glass. Either which way. And we see some classic examples. I mean, Lord Rama's example. Is the story a success? Is the story a... You know, it leaves you at the end with this kind of strange thought. Because, yes, Ravan has gone. To that extent, he could win back. But look at the Ram Raj. It's without Sita. Sita has to walk away and give her body. So it leaves you with this idea. Look at the Gita, look at Mahabharata itself. Yes, it's success in the sense that there is a one step humanity takes forward, both with Rama and Krishna. But if you look at their personal life, I mean, Krishna is seeing the destruction of his own kul in front of his eyes. Must have pained him, but of course he's divine. But still, these people had the best chance. Really look at it, they had the best chance. And they ended up fighting and destroying themselves. So, of course, Krishna is devotees are devotees. But that's where the difference lies. That he may give whatever he may decide. Action, all action has indeed to be given up in the end, not physically by abstention, by immobility, by inertia, but spiritually to the master of our being, by whose power alone can any action be accomplished. Few lines below. The spiritual transference of all our works to the master and his Shakti is the real sannyas in the teaching of the Gita. It's not an external renunciation. So the credit goes to him. And whatever results come are his. And at some point one can say even the effort, as Shurvindo says, even the effort is hardly mine. That's how he could write all this. So because you have transferred everything to the master and then you are engaged in action. So this is what the Gita describes. And then comes, now we enter into the main aspect of the chapter. And he describes to us very beautifully, page 496. There must be, last few lines from below, page 496. So often we say, okay, inwardly I have renounced. What does it mean that I have renounced? There must be a complete renunciation of all desire and of all self-regarding egoistic choice and impulse. And finally of that much subtler egoism of the will, which either says, the work is mine, I am the doer, or even, the work is God's, but I am the doer. All this, these are very subtle things. One may leave one's home, one may leave one's, comfort zones and be in an ashram. And yet, if this idea is there that I am the doer, I am important. If I am not there, the work will fail. Work will collapse. All these are contrary to spiritual life. That's why it's not easy, because it's an inner working upon ourselves. It's very easy to join an institute, organization and work and get into the same rhythm, same routine, same ego play, same desire. Only desires become more subtle, because in an organization like, let's say, Auroville or Ashram, you obviously are not going to get a pay rise, but you can still get a rise in terms of being part of the official bandwagon, in being closer to the, corridors of power. So all these, one has to renounce if one wants the divine and the divine alone. They may come, they may go, but all attachment here. So Shurvindo says very clearly, there must be no attachment to pleasant, desirable, lucrative or successful work, and no doing of it because it has that nature. So it may come to us, but to do it because it's lucrative, you are being over. I am close to the seat of power, so one has to be very clear. It has to be done totally, selflessly with the assent of the spirit. When it is the action demanded from above and from within us, kartavyam karma. Meaning thereby we have to consult our own nature. Is this what I am here to do? Is this action taking me closer to the divine, a practical or it's only because it's putting me in the corridors of, you know, echelons of power, and it gives me name and fame. So any such motive is contrary to spiritual seeking. There must be no aversion to unpleasant, undesirable or ungratifying action or work that brings or is likely to bring with it suffering, danger, harsh conditions, inauspicious consequences. For that too has to be accepted. So it all comes under kartavyam karma. So I was smiling because if you look at the ashram, you'll see that people who study in the ashram school and come out, many of them want to have a desk job, sit on the chair. It's human nature. But there are people who come from outside, who come from Odisha and all, they go for, you know, dining room work and things where your hard physical labor is required. It's there. So there should not be any attachment that I'll do only that kind of job where I have to sit on the desk and, or even what I have studied for. I remember when I had come in the beginning, so somebody asked me, will you, we need someone in marbling. I said, all right. But are you sure you will do it because you are a doctor? I said, so what? I have forgotten I am a doctor. I am happy to do this rather than do my doctory. So, but then it's different that they came to know, they pulled me on this side. Otherwise, you should be happy whatever you are doing. See Nirodha, he was looking after the timber go down. And once there is a famous letter exchanged. And he says, I don't know how far I'll be, how much I'll be useful in the timber go down. He says, because of you, the timber go down has been saved from all the thieves. Because our dining room in charge, Ved Prakashji, he was a postgraduate in economics, professor of economics. And people asked him that, why are you doing this work? You are dealing with, you know, vegetables, cooking and all this. He said, no, no. Here my economics is best put to use. So any kind of attachment that I'll do this work or not that kind of work, that's the training which one gets in the ashram. We know Rishabh Chand, one of the work which was given to him was to kill the furniture department. He was another intellectual. He has written nice, lovely, and business family. And very intelligent man. He has written that famous book, Sri Aurobindo, His Life Unique. And he was given work in the furniture department. So he wrote a very nice letter to mother. Yes, whatever work is given, I'll do it. Such a joy. And the first work that comes to him, mother sends a chit. There are bed bugs in the furniture. You have to kill them. Now his Jain mind comes. I'm a Jain. How can I kill bugs? Killing bugs is sin. So he keeps that letter of thank you. Writes to Sri Aurobindo another letter that mother has given me this work. She probably doesn't know that I am a Jain and I am not supposed to kill the bugs. And Sri Aurobindo replies, whatever work mother has given you is meant for your progress. Do it with that intention. So poor fellow started, you know. Yet no choice. And that time bugs, it was so difficult to kill them. You had to put some hot oil or something, they will come out, then you have to literally kill them. You have to practice utter samatha. See how Arjun has to fight his own people. So there must be no aversion. Then that is kartavyam karma. So the wise man puts away the shrinkings and hesitations of the desired soul and the doubts of the ordinary human intelligence that measure by little personal, conventional or otherwise limited standards. Because this is a word why Sri Aurobindo is describing in great detail, because many of us feel I am married, I have to look after my family. That's my kartavyam karma. Oh, that's a social karma. Not kartavyam karma is the inner. Because if I do that, then you know there is no yoga required. Everybody is anyways doing it. So one has to look within, what does the divine wants of me? And one has to follow that. So that is the difficulty. Few lines below. He will not do action for the sake of any personal result or for any reward in this life or with any attachment to success, profit or consequence. Neither will his works be undertaken for the sake of a fruit in the invisible hereafter or ask for a reward in other births or in worlds beyond us. the prizes for which the half-baked religious mind hungers. So there is a line in Savitri when Shubhendu describes Madonna of might. And she says, I care not for virtue or for sin, but do the deed God has put into my heart. She's not worried about the frown of heaven or for the assault of hell. She does what divine has put into her heart. And that's what is required of, to be a really a yogi of in karma yogi and kartabhyam karma. And so he says that, you know, religious mind hungers. Like there are people other day, religious mind who blow themselves up and blow up others also in the hope that we'll go to paradise where we'll find probably some 72 women. I don't know what kind of a perverse mind that would be. But it is there. There are people and they justify it. Say, no, he has done it for the sake of God. So they have created even a perverse heaven. So this is not a spiritual teaching. Spiritual teaching does for nothing, not even a reward in heaven. Not a reward here. One does it simply because as one breathes. A flower does not bloom to be appreciated. It blooms because that's what is its kartavyam karma. A flower doesn't know, no, I'll bloom only when a nice person comes near me. Otherwise, if it sees somebody who is a bad guy, flower doesn't shrink and hide. It blooms. That's why, that's the perfect example of kartavyam karma. The Gita then speaks of the five causes or indispensable requisites for the accomplishment of works as laid down by the Sankhya. Now comes that aspect. These five are, first, the frame of body, life and mind, which are the basis or standing ground of the soul in nature, Adhisthan. So obviously, if they are important. I can't say I want to do divine work and I get tired and my body gets tired. Then it will all remain a wishful thinking. That's it. So these must be in good condition. So one has to remain healthy if one really wants to do the work. Next, the doer, karta. So who is the doer? If it's the ego which is the doer, then the action will be completely, it will be distorted, it will bring all kinds of turbulences. So the doer should be ideally the psychic being within us. Third, the various instrumentation of nature, karana. So nature operates, pushes us through various impulses, urges, mechanically, or through some desires. So these are the various processes through which nature acts. Fourth, the many kinds of effort which make up the force of action, cheshtaha. And last, fate, devam. So these are the five things which are discussed here. We are in chapter 18. And this is what one has to consider now. The doer is, now next passage, the doer is ordinarily supposed to be our surface personal ego. So this is how it appears that, well, doer means me. But as long as it is this me, this little figure constructed in time and space by nature and forces of a one lifetime, that surface personality, then one is not yet into the real doership. So one has to recognize the true doer. The ego is the ostensible doer, but the ego and its will are creations and instruments of nature with which the ignorant understanding wrongly identifies ourself, and they are not the only determinants even of human action, much less of its turns and consequences. So one has to understand who is the doer. Doer is universal nature. If nature goes on a shutdown one day, we are tired, then let's see what the doer does. Simply you are tired, you are exhausted, there is no energy, then the doer goes on a absolutely shutdown mode. So the doer is universal nature, is the doer of the work, and the divine will behind as the master of universal nature. This is what we have to remember, first thing is. So, the sense of doership, ownership, sense of being important. If I am not there, the work will not take place. This is the great teaching of the Gita where when Arjun says that, look here, I am feeling hesitant. So what does Shri Krishna show? He says, you know what, I have done it. You can, I am giving you the first chance because you are dear to me, that's all. Even if you step aside and you are away sitting in the shivir, you don't come out, still, even if you take sannyas, my will be accomplished. I will have instruments who will do it. I am giving you only the joy to be the instrument. So we have to understand the difference between the doer and the instrumentation. We can be instruments, we can refuse to be an instrument, we can be good instrument, we can be imperfect instrument. But the doer must be the divine will, which is the only part in us which receives it is the psychic being. So he says that okay, so this is the first part. Last two lines on this page, page 498. The liberated man does all his appointed work as the living instrument, one in spirit with the universal spirit. And knowing that all this must be and looking beyond the outward appearances, he acts not for self, but for God and man and the human and cosmic order. Lok Sangrahartha, that's the term. He does not act for what advantage I will get. If I do this work, I'll be close to the trustees and they will do favors to me. All this is cannot come in the calculation of a person who is there to do the karma yoga as enunciated in the Gita. All these human calculations don't count. You have to be close to the divine. At the end of the day, the only thing that will count for a yogin is how close I am growing to the divine. Not how close I am growing to the seats of power. Not in fact himself acting, but conscious of the presence and power of the divine force in his deeds and their issue. And he will know it. He just cannot be, he won't be able to even claim that I have done this because that state is not there. The sense of doer is not there. People may think, but he cannot. If he is doing it, it's just the ego which is coming up because he cannot, he knows that he has not done anything. So this is the first thing. He knows that the Supreme Shakti is doing in his mental, vital and physical body, Adhisthan, as the sole doer, the thing appointed by a fate which is in truth not fate, not a mechanical dispensation, but the wise and all-seeing will that is at work behind human karma. This terrible work on which the whole teaching of the Gita turns is an extreme example of action, inauspicious in appearance, akushalam, though a great good lies beyond the appearance. So he has to do it, whatever be the calling of the divine within, and the divine Shakti accomplishes. There is a nice bhajan by Dwijendra Lal Roy, if I remember correctly, and he says that, Tomar karmo, tumi karoma, loke bole kori ami. You are the doer of your works. People think it's me. So he just says that tamar karma, sakali tumari iksha. All is your will. You are expressing yourself in countless ways. It is your work and you are doing it, accomplishing it. People think it is me. So that's the state that one reaches. It's a state of inner freedom. Impersonally, has it to be done by the divinely appointed man for the holding together of the world purpose, Lok Sangrahartham, without personal aim or desire because it is the appointed service. Appointed by whom? By the divine. It rises within you as the thing to be done and you do it. And you are not even attached to that work. Because today it's you, tomorrow you may be asked to be somewhere else. You are ready to move. Shift as per the orders. That's how Shivindu says that he got the orders. So that's how he left a work which was so important and he left for something which none understood that time. So that is the whole idea of Kartavyam Karma and the doer. It is clear then that the work is not the sole thing that matters. The knowledge in which we do works makes an immense spiritual difference. And then he says, there are three things, says the Gita, which go to constitute the mental impulsion to works, and they are the knowledge in our will, the object of knowledge, and the knower. And into the knowledge there comes always the working of the three gunas. So what is the knowledge? The will, in the will which is impelling us, I may do the same thing, but my will may be for union with the divine, my will may be to impress people, my will may be to find the easy way out. So as is the will in knowledge, so is the quality of the work. And then he describes that the tamasic, rajasic, that we'll just read quickly, few lines. The tamasic mind does not look for real cause and effect, but absorbs itself in one movement or one routine with an obstinate attachment to it. Can see nothing but the little section of personal activity before its eyes, and does not know in fact what it is doing, but blindly lets natural impulsion work out through its deed, results of which it has no conception, foresight or comprehending intelligence. That is the tamasic. It's like the donkey carrying the burden. It doesn't know why. Or the bull which is plowing the field. It doesn't know that, you know, I am being such an important person. That's how they will be able to sow the seeds. It doesn't know. Not because it has the higher wisdom where, you know, it knows that it's the divine who is the doer. It's simply because that is the work it has to do today. Because of the command of the Malik, it has to have its own food. And so it continues to do that work regularly. The Rajasic knowledge, page 500, is that which sees the multiplicity of things only in their separateness and variety of operation in all these existences, and is unable to discover the true principle of unity or rightly coordinate its will and action, but follows the bent of ego and desire, the activity of its many branching egoistic will and various and mixed motive in response to the solicitation of internal and environing impulsions and forces. This, I had know very well, because often, you know, when you travel out, now there are people who think if you are traveling out, you are not doing mother's work. Mother's work equal to ashram work or Auroville work. No. Everywhere in everything you have to do mother's work. Otherwise there is a division in the being. There is the family where you are connected through your desires, and then there is mother's work which you do in the office. That's what mother tells in volume 3. She says, you cannot afford to do like that, that if I am going with a friend and chatting, that means now it is not work. Now I can relax. But when I come to the office, I have to sit very seriously and be concentrated. She says, you cannot do integral yoga with this attitude. All work is mother's work. Traveling, meeting people, going out, or various. But you have to make sure that why you are doing it. If you are doing it just for fun and joy, then, well, at the beginning, there is the egoistic desire. But if it is not that, if you are being sent as part of her working, by all means, and there are situations in which things will happen and come to you, even take them as part of the mother's work. So this is where we have to be careful that, you know, Rajasic wants only, it makes a division, this work, that work, that work, that work. But when all works become a movement of the one divine Shakti in us, then we are on the royal road to yoga. Okay. So, the sattvic knowledge, this about 10, 12 lines from above, same page, 500. The sattvic knowledge, on the contrary, sees existence as one indivisible whole in all these divisions, one imperishable being in all becomings. It masters the principle of its action and the relation of the particular action to the total purpose of existence. It puts in the right place each step of the complete process. So whether one is here, one is elsewhere, one is with friends, one is with family, one is moving 100 things in the world. Everywhere one has to remember that it's the mother who has to work through us, and it's the mother in various forms with whom we are dealing. Then things will be fine. So in the sattvic man, the personal will has come to be entirely conscious, illumined, spiritually awake, and it lives and works in the one. Obeys more and more perfectly the supreme mandate. So what does it mean, awake? Meaning thereby we may do apparently mother's work in Auroville or anywhere in the ashram. But our mind may be fully oh, if I do this, this is the benefit I'll get, this is the advantage I'll get. Or one may do it purely mechanically as part of a routine. But the Gita wants us to become conscious that whatever we may be doing, wherever we may be doing, ultimately it is the Mother who is working through us. And we should try not to be a hindrance by bringing in the ego and the desire element. These are the two thieves, basically. The two thieves slain by the side of Christ. Ego and desire. Because unless you slay them, there is no liberation. So they have to be slain. And then the works are divine work. Okay. There are again three things. The doer, the instrument, and the work done that hold the action together. So the doer, the instrument through which we are doing, and the actual work. The sattvic mind that seeks always for a right harmony and right knowledge is the governing instrument of the sattvic man and moves all the rest of the machine. Always the sattvic man would want there should be harmony, there should be beauty. That's his bent of mind. Rajasic man wants conquest. My will must conquer. Others must be defeated. Whatever I have decided, that must happen. This is how the Rajasic mind operates. Tamasic mind says, I don't care, I have to just do mechanically. Who wins, loses, whatever, it doesn't care. So these are the three impulses behind action. So one is the sattvic mind. An egoistic will of desires supported by the desired soul is the dominant instrument of the Rajasic worker. There is in it that egoism, I am the doer, I must be recognized. Or I must get some benefit. Somewhere my name should come, my photo must come. My video must be circulated. Somewhere something should happen that people know where I am, close to the top echelons. That's how. That's the Rajasic mind. And the crude vital nature is the chief instrumental force of the tamasic doer of action. So then the tamasic doer is an ignorant instinct or the unenlightened impulsion of the physical mind, and the crude vital nature is the chief instrumental force of the tamasic doer of action. Tamasic doer of action is, I'm getting a job, tell me what I have to do, he'll do. He's not bothered about divine work and what is going to come, about yoga. So these are the three kinds of work. And then he describes, of course, tamasic action is that done with a confused, deluded and ignorant mind. In mechanical obedience to the instincts, impulses and unseeing ideas. So if one does the work like the bullock, whatever you are giving, it just does that work. That's it. And when the job is over, it eats its share of grass. Rajasic action is that which a man undertakes under the dominion of desire, with his eyes fixed on the work and its hoped for fruit. And then there is the sattvic work. Sattvic action is that which a man does calmly in the clear light of reason and knowledge and with an impersonal sense of right or duty or the demand of an ideal as the thing that ought to be done, whatever may be the result to himself in the world or another. So there is a very interesting little story about three people who were, apparently outwardly constructing a temple. So they were taking out stones and carrying the stone and placing it, then building a temple. You have the example of Matri Mandiris. So there was a passerby, he asked someone, what are you doing? So the tamasic man says, oh, it's drudgery, now destiny has placed me here. It's okay, I have to do this every day, I have to carry these many bricks and I have to take it. That's it. Okay, now don't disturb me because I have to finish my job, then go home and take rest. Then he asks another man, what are you doing? He says, oh, I am getting a good pay. That's why, see, Mother has removed these things. This is not a job that one gets here and one doesn't get paid. Now, this is something very interesting. So Rajasic man does it because he is earning some money. So he's doing it well. But he says, I'm waiting when I'll get a call from the USA. I'll be well paid for this same job and I'll leave this and go. And when both say, our job is to carry bricks. And so the third sattvic man, he asks, what are you doing? He's also doing the same thing. He says, I am engaged in building a temple. Don't disturb me. It's the most beautiful thing of my life. I am engaged in building a temple. The same work, but he looks at it so differently. He has an illumined intelligence that carrying a brick to build the Matri Mandir is far more precious. You may carry bricks everywhere, but that's where the right understanding, the right impulse goes in. So, then he describes all that, you know, the tamasic doer of action is one who does not put himself really into the work, but acts with a mechanical mind, or obeys the most vulgar thought of the herd. So you have a work, they will come, do it, tuck, 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 finish it and go. My time is over. And the Rajasic man does it, but depends on, he wants praise, or he wants some pay raise, he wants to be noticed, he wants people to say, ah, such a lovely thing you have done. So he's doing it for that. And Sattvic man does it because it is the thing to be done, it's his service to the All Beautiful. Whatever work it may be the smallest of work. So this he describes. The Rajasic doer of action is somewhere in the middle, page 502. This is important because most of us are caught in this Rajasic domain. The Rajasic doer of action, on the contrary, is one eagerly attached to the work, bent on its rapid completion, passionately desirous of fruit and reward and consequence, greedy of heart, impure of mind, often violent and cruel and brutal in the means he uses. And he justifies it. I'm doing it for God. That's the worst. He cares little whom he injures or how much he injures others, so long as he gets what he wants, satisfies his passion and will, vindicates the claims of his ego. He is full of an incontinent joy in success, and bitterly grieved and stricken by failure. We know such a man exists today, very prominent leader of a country. Rajasic doer at it, if you want to see, you don't have, you just portray. Here is a man, you see classic telltale signs of a Rajasic doer. Absolutely. The Sattvic doer is free from all this attachment, this egoism, this violent strength or passionate weakness. His is a mind and will annihilated by success, undepressed by failure, full of a fixed impersonal resolution, a calm rectitude of zeal, or a high and pure and selfless enthusiasm in the work that has to be done. So this is what Sri Krishna is revealing to us, that in every action, these are the elements we have to consider. It's not just I have faith in the mother and therefore I am working in mother, doing mother's work, but the ego is coming in, the desired self is raising its head. That doesn't help. That is only delaying the whole process. Okay. So we come to now the last few things. It talks about the understanding, Rajasic understanding. It's a detailed description, but we'll come toward the end. Yeah. Page 505. Page 505. So each of the elements he describes based on these three. So basically we can understand it very simply. Anything that we are doing, anything that we are, the will arises in us, we should see these three elements. Is it just a mechanical thing? Is it my benefit, I am looking through it, some satisfaction of desire, maybe obvious, maybe subtle, maybe trying to be close to the echelons of power, maybe some pay raise, maybe, you know, getting an important position. All these are the ways of the Rajasic ego. This is the most common problem. And the third is whether I want to do it because this is the work that divine has appointed me from within, or this is the work which destiny has offered to me. It can be both ways. But whatever is given to me, I must do it with a spirit of harmony, peace, beauty, as an offering to the divine, even if nobody recognizes, nobody praises, and even if I get no return out of it. That is the Sattvic doer. So the whole emphasis is first become a Sattvic person. Because from sattva, you can go to the next step. But from rajas, you have to either rise there or you will fall miserably. So the essence of this whole chapter is, if you are in tamas, then change your ways. If you are in rajas, you are not confirmed. You may go up, you may go down. Because that's how rajas takes us. So first, basically cultivate the sattvic impulse where we do an action, because this is the deep will within us, not for any advantage, not for any personal gains, not for any profit, not for being close to people who matter. None of these motives. But as an offering to the divine in the right measure and for building more and more harmony, peace and beauty in this world. So this is what is the essence of this chapter. Page 505. Harmony and order are the characteristic qualities of the sattvic mind and temperament. Quiet happiness, a clear and calm content, and an inner ease and peace. So this is how one will distinguish a sattvic person. In his presence, you will never feel intimidated. You will always feel that calm, that harmony, that inner joy. You will be at ease. As simple as that. Otherwise, a rajasic person, you will be ill at ease. Because you are always feeling somebody who is putting some kind of pressure on you. Tamasic man, you will not know where you are and why you are. You will be totally confused, lost. So, this is the sign of a sattvic person. Happiness, then he little bit elaborates that there are different kinds of happiness. So, happiness is indeed the one thing which is openly or indirectly the universal pursuit of a human nature. But there are different kinds of happiness. Few lines below. But there are various kinds of happiness or pleasure according to the guna which dominate in our nature. So we should not seek pain. Seeking pain is not a healthy impulse. That I am deliberately taking, it's a sign of extreme tamasic person. Some people lying on thorns, as I was saying in that Kumbh Mela, or on bed of nails, that's asuric in nature. But happiness also is of different kinds. Thus, the tamasic mind can remain well pleased in its indolence and inertia, its stupor and sleep, its blindness and its error. Nature has this subtle sense of humor. Nature has armed it with the privilege of a smug satisfaction in its stupidity and ignorance. The person doesn't want to know, doesn't want to understand. It says, I am part of the herd, and you live by the herd. Every day you do a job, you're fine, happy. In the evening, probably one goes and indulges in all kinds of drinks, etc. That's part of the tamasic nature. It's tamasic nature where you are not inwardly, naturally happy. So you take to drugs, drinks, extreme ways to get some happiness. And that's the tamasic way. The next paragraph, the last paragraph on this page, 505. The mind of the rajasic man drinks of a more fiery and intoxicating cup. The keen, mobile, active pleasure of the senses and the body, and the sense-entangled or fierily kinetic will and intelligence are to him all the joy of life and the very significance of living. So if you have to do the same thing like a routine, the rajasic mind doesn't enjoy. He wants change. Some kind of change must be there. Some kind of activity, some kind of action, some kind of big things, posters, names, all this. Rajasic man cannot just continue doing the same thing every day. This joy is nectar to the lips at the first touch, but there is a secret poison in the bottom of the cup, and after it the bitterness of disappointment, satiety, fatigue, revolt, disgust, sin, suffering, loss, transience. It's very nice in the beginning, but later on, as time passes by, the poison, you taste the draught and it's poisonous, and you can't do without it. Because you've got addicted to it. That's what happens to those who seek power. And they find it so miserable when they have to leave. Because, you know, you can't imagine life without that. You need something like a power. I know so many instances of people who suffered so much intense rajas, but when they had to leave a position, it led to a lot of unhappiness. What the sattvic nature seeks, therefore, is the satisfaction of the higher mind and the spirit. And when it once gets this large object of its quest, there comes in a clear, pure happiness of the soul, a state of fullness, an abiding ease and peace. Why? Because you are serving the divine. Every day you go and do this work. Doesn't matter. Some days there is no outer work. You are just sitting quietly. Because that's how it has been preordained. And you come back, there is that sense of joy, peace, deep satisfaction, growing closeness with the divine. This happiness does not depend on outward things, but on ourselves alone and on the flowering of what is best and most inward within us. But it is not at first our normal position. Obviously, the Gita does not talk about the psychic being, but the flowering of the best within us. When we do this way, the psychic being opens. It has to be conquered by self-discipline. So basically, in the beginning, sattvic life requires a lot of inner rectitude. Even if, you know, work is going to be delayed, you go there in time. You just sit there because you are in the service of the mother. Even if no one appreciates or notices, still you do it every day as an offering to her. So it requires a lot of self-discipline. Normally we are moved because of either what I get in return or because of drudgery. But this is the beauty of the sattvic nature. At first, this means much loss of habitual pleasure, much suffering and struggle, a poison born of the churning of a nature, a painful conflict of forces, much revolt and opposition to the change due to the ill will of the members or the insistence of vital movement. They will say, what is it you are doing? What is the advantage of all this? And what are you getting in all this? But then he says, but in the end, the nectar of immortality rises in the place of this bitterness. And as we climb to the higher spiritual nature, we come to the end of sorrow, the euthanasia of grief and pain. How lovely this is. So, rajasic action, tamasic, you are the bullock or the donkey. In the beginning, you are the bullock and the donkey in the end. Rajasic action, you believe you are a lion in the beginning, but as your shoulders droop and drag, you become a tiny. What happens to most elderly people in their homes? And they suddenly realize they are no more the boss. But if you are a sattvic person, you only, in the beginning it is difficult. All self-discipline is difficult. But later on you blossom, you develop, and you are full of beauty, love and joy. Finally, the self-exceeding of the sattvic nature comes when we get beyond the great but still inferior sattvic pleasure, beyond the pleasures of mental knowledge and virtue and peace, to the eternal calm of the self and the spiritual ecstasy of the divine oneness. That spiritual joy is no longer the sattvic happiness, sukham, but the absolute ananda. So this the whole journey, sattva, rajas, tamas, these are the three operating systems. Tamas is dullness, thoughtlessness, doing things mechanically for whatever purpose they have fallen on to us by dev or bhagya. Often we do it as a drudgery, what to do? I am stuck in Oroville. I could have been elsewhere. The people who may think like that, destiny is brought. They are never fully, but now they can neither be here nor there. So they are caught in a tamasic state. Rajas is, I want to be a big man. Okay, in Oroville, I'll do some project that people recognize, know that, you know, I am someone or something. Nobody recognizes. Oroville is meant like that. It will not flatter your ego. Somebody will tell you something which will suddenly, you will crash down. There is a purpose which is beautiful. It doesn't flatter to your ego. So then you will feel bad, good for you. Then the other is the sattvic. Sattvic says, okay, this is where deep within me, I have the urge, Lok Sangrahart, what is for the good of all mankind? Well, Auroville is a project worth doing for the good of mankind. Here I see the hope, not just of individual liberation, but of a collective emancipation of mankind. So someone may say, but it may fail. So you say, let it fail if it has to fail. Yet I do it because this is the thing to be done. That's what is within me. One is not doing for any external, outer. That's different, that the faith tells you it won't fail. But I'm just saying, even if everything were to crash, Shobindo says that even if I knew that all this would fail and the world would go to smash, still I would continue to do what I am doing. It's not today. You are laying the foundations for the future. So then you are not disturbed by what happens outside. That's a journey. But you are contributing whatever you can for the Lok Sangrahart, for the greater good of mankind. Today or tomorrow, it is bequeathed to mankind that it has to have a divine destiny. Whether I'll see it with my own eyes in this life or with my own eyes in another life. But that's what is to be done regardless of everything. So this is the sattvic impulse and we must do it with that attitude. That's the whole secret of action which is being revealed to us. Jai Maa.